Okay, hello and welcome to the second episode of the podcast.
Yeah, I think episode's a good word.
I think we can go with episode. All right, cool. So, last night was the Oscars.
We won.
We did. Yes, if you recall from the last episode.
Which if you haven't listened to, go and listen to it now, because this next bit is just going to make no sense.
Yeah, and you won't know kind of what charming personalities we are or anything.
To
like
be fair, there wasn't much question that anyone you heard anywhere also put money on the Oscars. There wasn't much riding on it.
Yeah, I was surprised by how many people were surprised at Meryl Streep winning. Because we said, you know, we both thought Meryl Streep would win. But it seems like a lot of people expected Viola Davis from The Help to win.
Oh, right.
Again, put in a good performance. The performances of The Help were uniformly good. But
it was a solid film.
Yeah, I just think, I mentioned last time about Meryl Streep's being a kind of a meatier role, a more trendy role. I think that is the case. You know, she's an Oscar darling. But yes, so we got that right. Were there any controversial wins for you?
Not controversial. I was extremely pleased the Muppets got one.
Oh,
for
yes.
The Manor of Muppets song. It won Best Original Soundtrack.
Yeah.
Best Original Song.
I'm glad they won. I like Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords, but I felt that was one of my less favourite songs of the film.
It was the big one, though. It was the one they released before, and Chris Evans and the playing on radio.
And it was well executed, yes.
Yeah. And Jim Parsons.
Yes, he was in it.
Did he play piano on it? He did in the video, and he can play piano, so I'm assuming he actually did.
But yes, that was good. I'd like to. My beef with it was, again, if you haven't listen to the first episode, you won't know this, but I'm a big Tree of Life fan, and it didn't win the cinematography Oscar. Hugo took it. We haven't seen Hugo, but having watched the Tree of Life, there has never been a better looking film to my money. And the fact that it hasn't won cinematography, you can make a case for it not winning best film or any of those things, and fair enough. But the cinematography is stunning, and I'm very disappointed that didn't win. But other than that, I think it was very predictable.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people were complaining that it was too predictable, that there were few wild cards. Or
God damn the artist for being so good.
it does seem interesting that people are complaining that a good film has been acknowledged for being good rather than. Would they have been happier if Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close had won everything? Because that would have been an upset.
Yeah.
It would have also been madness.
I'm quite interested, because I haven't seen Jean Dujardin in anything else, I don't think. I'm quite interested, because I know he did the French equivalent of Austin Powers.
Oh, right. Well, yeah, he was a comic actor in France.
I'm quite intrigued to see that now. See what he's like when he can use words.
Yeah, it's true. And also, it'd be interesting to see where he goes from here, because, the world is his oyster now. But will he take the traditional European route of becoming villains in American action films, which seems to be the common choice, or will he kind of go for something a bit more powerful? I mean, don't get me wrong, I think he could do a great villain. I'd love to see him in Coen Brothers or a superhero villain or something. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where he goes from there.
And speaking of superhero villains, you have got your Bane impression nailed.
I have got my Bane impression nailed. I've been practicing it for many, many months with my hands over my mouth. And my Victorian accent placed perfectly. See, a lot of people are talking about... I went to see the prologue with my brother and a couple of my friends, and my brother was thinking it was more of a...
I wasn't invited.
You weren't invited, no, I'm afraid not. This was the days gone past. And my brother assumed it was some sort of European accent, like a Serbian accent or something.
Oh.
I assumed it was a Victorian English, kind of very posh accent, so... Yeah, well, it goes to show, because there were a lot of complaints. Have you seen the prologue?
I have not.
No. A lot of people are complaining about his voice being quite unclear and muffled. I didn't have a problem with it, because...
Well, if you're watching the Batman films with Christian Bale, Mr. Gravel-throat.
Although, again, I didn't have a problem with that either. I think maybe I'm just very tolerant towards the Dark Knight franchise, but
yeah.
I had no problem understanding him. Perhaps because I'm English, and to my mind, he was speaking in the English.
But then again,
accent.
So is your brother.
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest. I don't know what his problem was with it. I mean, he could understand it, but he just assumed it was some sort of bizarre accent from anonymous Eastern European country. But yes, I think we'll talk. Do you want to talk a little bit more about superheroes?
Yeah, there's the Avengers, Spider-Man, Dark Knight. We might as well.
I think we would just like to note at this point that we're not going to pretend to be a topical film podcast. We will just be talking about what we find interesting. I'm well aware that superhero films are discussed everywhere.
Yeah.
But we like to talk about them as well.
And
so.
There is this isn't scripted. If you were thinking, if that seemed a little too convenient, a segue.
If our professionalism doesn't give that away, yes. Well, we do have a sheet of paper here, which says Oscars underlined, and then we got it right. So that we did plan that bit, to be fair.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, there was a
but
degree
that,
of
planning. That's about it. The rest of it's just doodles.
There's a cube. Anyway, so yeah, superheroes. Obviously, I'm very much looking forward to Dark Knight Rises.
I'm more excited about Avengers. I mean, I know Dark Knight Rises will be good, but Avengers is just so out there.
It's true.
I'm intrigued to see how it's going to go.
I mean, I'm looking forward to that as well. I very much admire the ambition behind it. The fact that, you know, they took a risk with films like Thor. I mean, I'm still pleasantly baffled by how Thor became such a massive success. Well, not massive, but it certainly made its money back and more. With such an out there concept and with a character that so few are familiar with. I mean, to me, it's a parallel with John Carter, which we were talking about last time.
Go listen to the first one.
Yes. Where, you know, the audience just hadn't heard of the character. And Marvel got it right, and Disney have well and truly got it wrong, it seems.
But, I mean, someone pointed out to me the other day we were discussing Thor, and I was saying I was surprised how well it done. And he said, well, it couldn't really have gone wrong. You had Anthony Hopkins as Odin.
But yes, they did get this casting spot on. You know, Tom Hiddleston was a great Loki. Chris Hemsworth, I thought, was an excellent Thor. And then obviously they had the strong supporting players like Natalie Portman and Stellan Skarsgård. So,
and then all those people who said Idris Elba, you know, oh, you can't have him doing it. And then,
oh yes, Simon.
Didn't you just think that every scene he was in should have added a little subtitle like, that's why?
he was extremely badass. So that, I mean, I thought Thor was brilliant. Definitely my favourite of all the Marvel films. So that's, yeah, that, you know, Captain America was also good, I thought.
Yeah.
Again, risky concept to take such a kind of a hero orientated around patriotism and that kind of thing.
But like, yeah, I mean, I couldn't think of a better way to do a Captain America film, because they got it patriotic enough with the fact he's wearing the flag, but not so much it was, you know, weird.
Yeah, it was well executed. They did it in a very good way. And the fact that it was in World War II, you know, a period superhero film, is always very interesting. So yeah, I thought that was a strong film as well. Iron Man 2, I wasn't so keen on. What did you think?
No, it was. I think I probably liked it more than you.
Mm.
But it was still. I think that's. I haven't seen Hulk.
Oh, right.
I don't know if it's. But I thought it's the weakest of the other four.
Yeah, I mean Hulk was all right. It wasn't bad. I think I prefer Hulk to Iron Man 2 just because Iron Man 2 was very much. It was just messy and bloated and. It had too many elements. It reminded me a bit of Spider-Man 3, not so much of a train wreck, but you know, there was too many factors all getting in the way of each other. Whereas Hulk was a little bit more tight, and it wasn't fantastic. I think Hulk is probably the least interesting superhero by himself. He only kind of works as part of the ensemble. So as we'll see in the Avengers, I imagine.
Purely hypothetical, if we could choose the Avengers lineup of 5 or 4, well, there'll be 5 when they do the film because of Hawkeye, but. What 5 would you? I mean, you've got to have Cap and Thor.
Yeah.
Got to really have Iron Man. But like the other two slots.
Well, out of all the characters.
Out of any of them.
I mean, I'm perpetually disappointed that Spider-Man can't be part of the Avengers because of the licensing issues. You know, I'm not a huge comic fan, but from the ones that I've read of the Avengers, Spider-Man often has a lot of the best lines.
They're just quips.
Yeah, so, you know, his kind of wisecracking nature. I mean, obviously Iron Man's kind of taken up that mantle
Robert Downey
in the
Jr.
film.
I don't think that would work for the film. You'd have two of them at it. It might be a bit...
That's true, yeah. I think, to be honest, I really like the lineup for the Avengers current one. You know, I think Hulk being in there, Hawkeye, we'll see how that goes, but I like Jeremy Renner as an actor. Scarlett Johansson kind of has the thankless role of being the eye candy.
I always forget she was in Iron Man 2. Like, I just don't remember her part in it. I saw that film like twice and I just don't remember her being in it.
I think she was very much set up as the kind of, you need a woman in the group to make sure it doesn't look like
and
a two.
Kobe Schmulders as well. But we're betting she's dying, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, this is our theory is that she will die because...
Someone has
to. You know, Joss Whedon loves killing off his characters, but he can't do it to any of the major Avengers because they all have their own franchise. So, you know, might be Coulson, but he's very popular with...
That would resonate, though.
That's true. He might go for it. I know one of my friends is very fearful that this will happen, that Coulson will die heroically. But I don't know, I feel like he's so good in the films for just being the grounded element, especially in something like, you know, Thor, his small part in Thor, where it's just the totally, you know, human, real life, real person, no powers, no special kind of...
Hammers.
Yeah, so it'll be a risky move getting rid of him for the following films.
Well, are they planning to do any more Hulk films?
Hulk?
Well, yeah, because I know they've got a trilogy of Thor and a trilogy of Cap and then the third Iron Man, plus a few Avengers. Are they planning on doing any more Hulk?
I honestly have no idea. Yeah, I don't know. No, they can't get rid of the Hulk.
They might.
Surely not. No, he's...
It'll be a damn ballsy move.
The problem is, you feel with Marvel... I mean, I say this not in a kind of criticism, but would they kill off a character who could potentially make them money in the future? Rhymes if they
yeah, but
come
in Marvel,
up with
no
a
one
way...
ever really dies, do they?
Yeah, but
they leave them
true.
Open. It's like they're probably going to find a way to bring Bucky Barnes back.
Oh yeah,
spoiler.
yes, yeah. Spoiler alert for the next few minutes while we discuss various characters' deaths or possible kind of semi-deaths. Bucky, I imagine he will come back.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure in the comics it's very similar. And then he comes back as the Winter Soldier.
And, well, in the comics, Cap died for ages and then Bucky took over as
yeah.
the captain.
I doubt that will happen in the films,
no.
simply because they don't have the time. Red Skull has obviously been killed, in inverted commas, in such a way that they can easily bring him back. You know,
he just sucked
sort of
into some
went
cosmic
into space, continuum. Yeah, so he'll probably be, like, not very much like Loki died, in inverted commas, in Thor, where he just fell away, and obviously he's fine.
Yeah.
So,
but how would... What do you reckon the excuse for bringing Thor back is going to be? With, you know, destroyed Rainbow
Bridge?
Yeah,
it's very interesting. I'll be interested to see how they do it with a lot of characters, because, you know, Captain America, will he have moved on from losing the love of his life? You know, the girl in the
Well,
first
he
one?
Seemed to at the end, in, like, the post-credits bit, he was there.
But he wasn't
a
happy
chilling.
Man. He wasn't a happy man. He was punching that punching bag quite punchily.
I think that was just him taking out his frustrations on the world.
I'd just be interested to see how they deal with it, because all the characters have love interests who are basically going to be shelved for this film.
Yeah.
And, you know, with
but
Thor...
Which ones? It's Pepper Potts is appearing.
It's, I don't know, there's a bit of confusion on that.
Natalie Portman's not.
Yeah. So this is what I'm thinking, is like, Thor's going to, when he comes to Earth, what's he going to do? Is he just going to be like, is he just going to be grabbed and pulled into the team and be fine with it? Or is he going to say, well... No, I want to see Jane because, you know, I love her. Or
like the rest of the team could take Thor anywhere
yeah.
if he didn't want to go.
Yeah, because Thor can kind of do what he wants, can't he? So would he just... Or will they pull off a move of saying, you know, 3 months later and kind of just have a three-month period where we can just fill in the gaps and assume
yeah.
that Thor said hi and...
Well, do we assume she's got his arm guards, which he's lost for this film?
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that. Maybe they just want to show off his biceps.
I think he looks a lot more badass now.
I don't like
with
it.
Longer hair.
I think he looks weirder. I prefer his look in the Thor film. But we'll have to agree to disagree on such major issues as the costume change. I think we're both very excited.
Yes.
Amazing Spider-Man, same?
Not as excited, but still excited.
I've definitely gone up in excitement since the trailer.
Oh, it was a good trailer.
I was dubious, obviously, when the reboot was announced. I was outraged along with the rest of us. But then Andrew Garfield came in. Top actor, I very much like him, and then
his jokes with Dr. Lizard.
Yeah, yeah. I think we had this discussion in the first episode, didn't we?
I know that was in the one we did now, so they
Oh, yes,
it.
That was in our demo one that went horribly, horribly wrong.
Seven people died.
Oh, dear. But, yes, the Lizard. He is a doctor.
We think he has the right to use his PhD as his title.
Yeah, it's true.
Marvel just calls
you
him
You brought up
Lizard.
A good point, because, yeah, he has worked hard for that PhD.
And he's, what's his name outside when he's not
there? Kurt Connors.
Yeah, he's Dr. Connors.
Yeah.
So surely he should
still
be...
It does seem churlish to remove the title just because he's a giant lizard.
It's racist.
Although I suppose that he's not capable of doing any kind of...
I thought he was still supposed to be smart.
I don't think he's smart. I think he became a monster. In the Spider-Man cartoon, which is admittedly my only experience of the Spider-Man universe...
Oh, the 50s one?
Oh, no, one of the more recent ones.
Oh, right.
The lizard was just like a giant brute when he became lizard. He wore the coat to kind of
I know, the
to
one,
show the fact that
the
he
one
was
I saw
still a
that
doctor.
Was, I don't know if it's 50s, but the original series of it, Dr. Lizard was like one of the really first episodes or something.
Oh, right.
And yeah, he was like just as smart. He was just trying to get back to his kid, but because he'd like been abandoned, because he obviously was like pariahed for it, so he had to like hunt for food. And
yeah,
people just hated him and judged him, and it was pretty cruel.
Dark tale then.
Yeah.
One that they probably won't tell in the film.
No, he's just going to be a monstrous.
He looks very strange.
Yeah, I wasn't too pleased.
There's a lot of kind of debate about his appearance. They kept the tail, which a lot of people worried was not going to be in it. I can't remember why. I think one of the toys didn't have the tail on it, because we got the first look at him from all those toys, like the Pez dispensers. And
well, why would you put a tail on a Pez dispenser?
I don't think it was the Pez dispenser specifically, but Yeah, but they got rid of his kind of snout, his lizardy snout. He does look, someone pointed out on the internet that he looks like one of the Goombas from the Mario film. I think that is very much... I can't, once you see it, you can't kind of forget.
Well, I haven't seen the Mario film.
So. All right, you're not missing much. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It'd be interesting to see if they do a different take on it. We all expected a more light-hearted take, and they do seem to have more of the kind of the Spider-Man banter and the quips he makes.
Which Tobey Maguire did a little of, but nowhere near enough.
Not enough, yeah.
Spider-Man's supposed to be every other line.
But at the same time, the tone just seems to be quite dark as well. It's certainly not kind of light-hearted romp.
That's Spider-Man's thing, though, just going through the kind of hardship that no person should have to endure, yeah. And just sort of whistling and joking through it.
That's true. It's true. Oh, yeah, I'm not a huge Spider-Man. I don't have a massive knowledge of him from comics or anything, so this is just what I get from other people talking about it. But
mainly me.
But yeah, so it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to it more so than I was. But Dark Knight Rises, I think, is still my number one film. You know, I saw the prologue. There were bits of the prologue I wasn't crazy about. You know, I'm not 100% kind of squealing fanboy about it. But there's the sheer ambition of it. You know, the prologue scene is essentially Bane kidnapping someone off a plane. As far as I can tell, most of it is done with practical effects, the plane capture and stuff like that. It's all incredibly impressive. I'm a big fan of Bane. You know, Tom Hardy, I'm a fan of him. He's got a presence, I think is the best way of saying it. And Bane he's very menacing. And people are going to be disappointed just because of the sheer levels of hype.
Do you think Tom Hardy will top Heath Ledger's performance?
I don't think it's possible. I don't think, because of the nature of Bane, he wears a mask. You can't see his mouth. No. You can hardly see his expression. Well, you know, this is from the prologue.
Heath Ledger had a fairly static expression of the Joker. I thought that was what made him so terrifying. I mean, obviously he got the cut drawn on.
I don't know.
He always just kind of stares blankly at them, which I always thought would make him
scary. There are scenes like the one where he holds a knife in Gamble's mouth.
Yeah.
Where his expression is so much a part of the performance. Obviously, it always is with all performances, but you know, to have Bane wearing a mask, it makes him look impassive all the time, which is great for his character because he's being played as a very intelligent, physical villain, you know, very much full of power that he can unleash at any moment, which he does so with devastating effect in the prologue. But I just don't think it leaves much space for a... I think it'd be a great performance, but it probably won't reach Heath Ledger in terms of, if anything, the hype around it.
Well, especially as he passed away just after the film. The other thing with Dark Knight Rises, not Dark Knight Rises, just The Dark Knight, when it came out, there was, you know, Heath Ledger passed away, Christian Bale didn't go to court for attacking his mom or something.
Oh, did he? Yes, he went to court. I can't remember when it happened, but yes.
It was just after the release, I think.
Oh, right, okay.
And there's other stuff going around the same time, and that just sort of, that controversy ended up taking a load of more people to see it and going, oh, this is actually really good.
And I also think that with the Joker, it's one of the few villains, and one of the few characters, superhero characters in general, who all, you know, he's one of the few characters in comics and superhero things that the general public knows of. You know, most people have heard of the Joker. I know that my family had, and none of them have any interest in, you know, the superhero universe. So
they heard of Bane.
No, exactly. I mean, and Bane is an interesting character in the comic, you know, and there's a lot of potential with him, but I think only comic fans know of that. I just wonder whether
especially if people had seen the in the George Clooney one when Poison Ivy and Bane.
Yes, yeah, Bane was given a bizarre.
He was like a weird thug.
Yeah, so
that's how I always picture Bane.
Exactly, and this is I don't know whether the general public would have you know, Batman, was it Batman Forever?
I think it was the George Clooney one.
Yeah,
he only did one of them
in their kind of collective memory. But I just feel like it has hype as its own film, not through Tom Hardy's performance.
Yeah,
I think Tom Hardy will be great in it, but yeah, it won't be considered as matching Heath Ledger's, and it certainly won't be nominated for an Oscar or anything like that. So I'm very much looking forward to it. And the level of secrecy is another thing. We had it with Inception, and we have it again here. There have been set photos which I've avoided like the plague, but you know, other than that, I know very little about it.
Well, I saw some that were just so obviously faked. They were like, oh, this proves Robin's going to be in it. And someone had got a piece of paper stuck out the door and written Robin across it.
Yeah.
And it was like, yeah, this was Robin's dressing room. And it was just ridiculous.
The good thing about that is it does become that you can't distinguish rumour.
Well, I could distinguish that rumour.
I would hope that we could distinguish this one, but with some of them. Obviously, the set photos gave some of the stuff away, which is a bit of a shame. But the ambition of it. Spoiler alert again, at the end of the prologue, there's a series of quick shots. And in the final one, you see a battle in Gotham with hundreds and hundreds of people. I've heard that they've used 1,000 extras in it, battle. So, you know, the scale of it is definitely increasing. Remains to be seen whether that is actually bad for the film, whether it works out fine. But obviously, I have a lot of faith in Christopher Nolan to pull it off. So, yeah, we'll see how that one goes.
Well, they had some pretty large set pieces, obviously, in The Dark Knight. Like, all the convicts and the stuff on the boat, that was quite a few extras.
That's true. I think it's the scale of the actual battle, is that it is 1,000 people just brawling. It looks like some sort of riot. In the trailer, there's a fight with lots of police on the stairs. So, the scale is big.
Yeah, so, okay, so, I think we talked about the big ones coming out now.
Yep.
So, okay, just to finish, best moment in a superhero film.
Just off the top of my head, I love the confrontation between Loki and Thor at the end of Thor.
Oh, where he just like puts the hammer on him.
Before that as around the tree, is it? It's some sort of like weird ice tree laser thing.
Oh, interesting.
I can't remember.
By the Bifrost?
Yeah, there were lots of names in there. And then obviously more obvious one, the Dark Knight opening heist with the Joker, you know, fantastic. I've seen it so many times now that I forget how fantastic it was when I first saw it.
Yeah.
And how brilliantly done it was. What about you?
Well, for just sheer cheesiness, the end of the first Iron Man.
Oh, yes.
When he goes, like, I am Iron Man. And then, you know, Sabbath kicks in.
Yeah, the song, yeah.
Big riff.
There was
that. That was pretty cool. Mm. And then my other one would be from Thor, when Idris Elba's, what was his name, Hamdir? Is that his name?
Heimdall.
Why do I think Hamdir?
I don't know.
Heimdall fighting Loki, and like he's sort of swinging at him, and then Loki freezes him.
I think it's very clear we are both big fans of Thor.
Yeah.
I think it is one of the more underrated films of the year. I think a lot of people have forgotten about how great it was. And
Best picture.
Maybe not that far, but you know, when you have War Horse and Extremely Loud on the list, why not?
Could have got a nomination.
Anyway, that's it for this edition of the podcast, and we'll see you next time for more Jake's shenanigans.
Podcastery.
Podcastery.
Yeah. See ya.